If Janet's in attendance, oh, there you are. You make five. We now have a quorum. We're going to call this meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. First item, of course, on the agenda is the approval of the previous meeting.
I'm sorry.
Was that you?
That was me. I apologize.
Yeah. Is that going to continue, you think? Or anyway, from August 23rd, did everybody get a chance to read over the minutes from August 23rd? If so, would
Motion
somebody?
to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
Motion and second to approve. Is there any corrections or all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. Thank you. So we're gonna dive right into this discussion of the Port of South Whidbey's comprehensive plan update, and then we have Sharon Sappington and I believe her consultant, Jennifer, that are gonna just I wrapped this together because on South Whidbey, the data that Paul Sorensen with BST, Paul here to my left, has provided fits really well in with what we would be providing with our SEDS information that we sent out. I forget what the acronym was for that, but so I wanted to kind of blend them together. We're going to be a little limited on time, but I think we'll make it just fine. So, and before Paul starts, oh, did you have a question?
Well, more just like I want to make sure we have a little bit of time for issues of mutual interest. I would really like us to have a at least brief discussion about the mental health crisis that the police and the communities are facing.
We can get this done. So basically, you mean for the legislative priorities,
Well, I mean,
Scott?
it ties into that, but I think more just immediate. What do we do between now and when the state
So that'd
legislature
be
makes an
other
approval?
items of mutual interest then?
Yep.
Okay. We'll try and make sure that we have time. We'll get this wrapped up probably by 10 o'clock, and that meeting doesn't start till 10:15. So what I was going to say was over 10 years ago, the port had Paul's company BST do an economic development study on the port district. The port district boundaries are very similar to the island or the South Whidbey school district boundaries. I think it's only less than 20% of the total county population. It's up to around 18,000. I don't remember, something like that. But I noticed that there was some pretty dramatic changes. And when I went through it 10 years ago, I thought, wow, you know, this our community down there is aging, and the data shows that. And then what Paul's come up with now shows that it's dramatically increasing in that respect. So that, you know, I'm gonna let him go through this description. The reason I think this fits for the Island County Council of Governments is because you all, we can discuss the effects that that will have on the rest of the county and the needs that that bring up for the rest of the county. So, with no further ado, Paul Sorensen. Paul.
Great. Thanks so much, Kurt. It's my pleasure to be here. We are doing the comp plan in conjunction with Makers, the planning firm. So the comp plan will be out in next month or two. So if we could go to the first slide, which shows the mission of the port, which is to enhance the economic well-being of the community and improve public access to marine areas while respecting the unique rural character and environment of South Whidbey Island.
May I interject here on a question? For comprehensive plans, are port mandated like cities and
Yes, and Paul doesn't do a comp plan here. In this case, he's not. He's doing an economic study that'll help us create our comp plan. We have a another company that he just referred to, Makers, is doing our comp scheme. We're supposed to do it every 6 years, but it isn't necessarily the law, and we're a little late. Because of COVID, we figured we'd get inaccurate information if we tried to spend money on it in 2019 when it was due. So, good question. Go ahead, Paul.
Next slide. I've got quite a bit of material here too, so I'm going to go through it pretty quickly. What we wanted to really do was take a deep dive into employment and demographics on the island and figure out how much employment there is and where those employees are coming from. So there's about 3,800 jobs in South Whidbey. This is 2020, and obviously that's influenced a little bit by COVID, but the last number that's available for this area. A little more than 2,000 from South Whidbey, and then split between North Whidbey, Central Whidbey, and then also off-island. There's also almost 4,000 jobs off-island filled by South Whidbey residents. And then looking at transportation planning, there's about 1,500 people in South Whidbey who work from home. This uses the quarterly CEW numbers, so it doesn't include military. It doesn't include self-employed, but it's a good indication. Now, we wanted to look over time at what was happening with the jobs that South Whidbey residents have or jobs on South Whidbey. Now, this is South Whidbey residents. 41% on Whidbey Island, 27% in South Whidbey, 14% in the rest of Whidbey Island. And then 59% off island. So there's as many people working in King County as there are that are employed in South Whidbey. And that's been kind of growing over time. For workers in South Whidbey, 52% come from South Whidbey, 24% from the rest of Whidbey Island, and then 24% from off island. Since the port's interested in helping the economic structure of the economy, they want to figure out what's the best way to work with that. So it has to do with transportation planning, with workforce housing, with a variety of other things that we'll get into. Next one, please. And we looked at several different sectors and saw that in some of them, there's not much growth. And we know from looking at reports that have done, for example, for the city of Langley, that these businesses are really having a difficult time attracting and retaining employees. And I'm sure this is true throughout the county. It's true everywhere else that we work as well. Next slide.
Was that jobs or employees?
This is employees.
So the previous one, if you can go back one, Layla, the far right there, accommodation and food services, employees dropped dramatically. You can see the last blue bar.
Yeah, that's the COVID hit. So we don't have the 2021 and 22 numbers. We think they popped up a little bit. But looking at these trends over time, these are pretty flat.
Okay, just wanted to point that out. Go ahead, Leilan.
Next one is looking at some of the faster growth areas, and the port's also interested in trying to support family wage jobs. So manufacturing has grown. One of the biggest employers on the island, Nichols Brothers, is in the port district. Construction impacted some by recession, but overall has an upward trend. And then professional, scientific, and technical is growing. This demographic slide is the one that really struck us, is that youth, and we were looking at really what happened after 2009, after the recession. Youth 0 to 14 age has been pretty flat. There's been a decline in the number of workers, of residents in the working age, and a steady and dramatic growth for seniors over 65, and particularly over 85 is one of the fastest growing areas. And diving into this a little more, really looking at the age components of this, the ages between 15 and 59, you've had a decline of over 1,400 people from 2009 to 2020. The only growth in this group has been in the 60 to 64 range. We were really struck between this report and 10 years ago doing it, how much the drama in these changes. Next one. And a lot of this has to do with housing affordability. That's what we're hearing from employers, from economic development groups. I should give kudos to the EDC. We used quite a bit of your work from the county, from the state, and from the federal government as well. But clearly, this is something that's impacting all areas. And next slide. And particularly so in South Whidbey. And South Whidbey is a little bit unique, too, in that almost a third of the housing, as per the EDC studies, is seasonal housing.
Paul, let me cut in. Janet, did you have a question?
Well, my first question is, when do you want questions, at the beginning or during the presentation? Because I know we're trying to get a lot of stuff in today.
Yeah, I think we're okay. So why don't we ask them as they come up so they can stay current?
Okay, so I was asking about, that was a dramatic and interesting data point about the fastest growing population is over 85, and that our 15 to 59 is decreased by 1444. Sorry, I'm reading my notes. My question about that that's interesting is that a relationship to the fact that our housing, I'm looking for a correlation, and you're on the slide, our housing has grown increasingly less affordable for working folks. So are our 15 to 59, that mid-range, trying to build a career, raise a family, are they then going off island for jobs that pay well enough for them to be able to stay and live here?
Yes. So,
yeah, and part of that's going to be our, you've hit on what I'm hoping is our discussion, two different things, housing and transportation on and off the island. That's part of what I'm seeing here and part of the point. But go ahead if you have an answer, Paul.
So I think it's absolutely, when Langley did a study a couple of years ago looking at this, and they found that availability of reasonably priced housing was a big impact. They reported some of the businesses are paying ferry fare. Some are trying to have people live with them in order to provide housing for them. Even under those conditions, it's difficult to attract and retain employees.
But there are other issues. And for example, the port's commuter lot usage is way down. And I think there's, starting in COVID, with the ability to work remotely, I think there's just been a shift. And I think there's a ton of people that just haven't come back to the island. I we got to work on that a little bit. Anyway, you had a comment.
And the ability to work remotely.
30% of the houses are non-owner occupied. Is that what you said?
Well, it's seasonal. And so my question is if you could identify really what seasonal is, that people who live here part of the year or live someplace else part of the year, or is that Airbnbs? I mean, how are you defining seasonal?
I think the way it's defined is part-time ownership.
Part-time ownership.
Some of it may fit into the pool for Airbnbs.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, what we found, and we'll show in a little bit, is that although South Whidbey is 19% of the population, it's 40% of the tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that's
now, was that the tourism of Whidbey Island or Island County? I'm trying to remember.
That's of Whidbey Island.
So South Whidbey is 19% of the population, but 40% of Whidbey Island's total expenditure for tourism.
Yes. So it both is people coming to their second home, as well as some of that fitting into the Airbnb or VRBO type pools.
And some of those who have the second homes are still employed. They're choosing to work remotely. And does your data capture those who are working remotely off island or even on island? Does our data capture at all the remote workforce? It's one question I've had in all the data we're looking at. Is our ability to capture our remote workforce, and what does that mean?
I think there are some difficulties capturing it. I mentioned earlier that there's 1,500 jobs from people that work from home. This comes from the transportation planning statistics.
Oh.
And so I think that picks them up. As you can see, how it's happened everywhere is that during COVID, people started working remotely more and more frequently, and that's obviously had an impact. Now some of those employers are trying to draw people back, but the fact that 26% of your employee residents here that work off island work in King County is a really large group. And if they have the opportunity to work at their office for 2 or 3 days a week and work here the rest of the time, then I think you'll see some of that as well. But it's not well defined.
Let's move along here, Paul. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, next one. This looks at the ferry ridership, and you can see that the impact that occurred in 2020 and 2021 wasn't smoothed out in 2022. You live here, so you're all very well aware of what the issues are related to ferry service, and this is a big issue for for both commuters as well as visitors. And particularly that passenger, foot passengers has declined even more than the vehicular and vehicle passenger statistics. Next one. We looked at the surveys that the Washington State Ferry System does, and the Muckleteo-Clinton route has the highest dissatisfaction of all of the ferry routes.
Really?
And particularly because of the dependability of departures and arrivals, but also adequate parking, going down a little bit, and linking up between the Washington State Ferry and transit schedules. So this falls into another category that the port is providing parking, is looking at passenger ferry service, and also wants to work with other partners to improve that link, that coordination between ferry service and transit, as well as for those that are working in North and Central, would be getting them back and forth smoothly.
Yeah, that's another discussion I hope to have time for. It may end up in the IRTPO meeting. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll keep going. So these are the numbers we were talking about for tourism and the impact and in spending $103 million in 2020, according to Dean Runyon Associates in South Whidbey. And it's a very important part of the community. And it fits in with just the overall livability of the area as well. Next slide. So these are my takeaways on what the port's looking to do. Kurt, feel free to chime in. The port provides marine access at boat ramps and at South Whidbey Harbor. They're looking right now to expand the South Whidbey Harbor to provide additional moorage. Most of the current moorage serves visitors, so it falls into the tourism category. New ramps have not been built, and maintenance issues have made some existing ramps unusable. This is a big issue, not only for residents and for visitors, but also for safety. And I referenced the plane crash that occurred and where the emergency services can get to any issues that would occur. So it really is coming down to also hand-powered craft, looking at some way to better accommodate those folks. There were discussions with all of those groups as a part of the comp plan. Next slide. Transportation, seeking to increase employment opportunities for residents who work in South Whidbey, as well as those that commute to jobs off island, and also serve visitors and employees coming to South Whidbey. A key focus really is commuter parking, planning for faster ferries, fast ferry service, passenger service, working with other partners to improve that access. And the ports has several projects that fit into that category. Next slide. Tourism. Tourism is one of the key drivers. So it's 40% of Island County happens in South Whidbey. It's only 19% of the population. Destination spending not only helps the businesses in South Whidbey achieve higher revenues, but it also supports a larger variety of businesses than would otherwise exist. And that adds to the livability of South Whidbey for residents as well as tourists. But the wages in the tourism-oriented businesses are low relative to other jobs in the area. So linking in with the question about affordable housing, it's also creating stronger tourism as well as stronger family wage jobs in the area. And the port wants to enhance that. And then new projects. Port's considering developing workforce housing. It would lead to a more diversified population base, help local businesses retain their workforce, give young residents the ability to remain in South Whidbey, and enable seniors access to caregivers. And relative to infrastructure development, work with public and private partners on water, sewer, and other infrastructure in order to create family wage jobs. So that's a summary of what we've been working with for the port.
Did you have a slide that showed the we had a couple of slides, and one that showed the amount of service workers that had declined, or did I already see that?
Yeah, we have that. Leila, if you can go up to the employment jobs, the one that shows retail, let's see.
The other one was reference to medical workers in terms of
slide six, Leila. That one, healthcare and social assistance. You can see how flat that is. And I think, Kurt, your point is a good one, too. You compare that with the slide that shows how rapidly that population base over 65 is going. You just haven't kept up locally with that.
It's basically flat in the last, 10 years?
This is 2002 to 2020, so 18 years.
Yeah, but it looks like the last half of it was very flat, or two-thirds of it was flat. And then in terms of the accommodation and food services, of course, we see that dramatic drop. So we've got both of those industries actually declining in the amount of employees or employable people that we have in those categories. And we have an aging population that's going to need more healthcare and assistance and more service workers. So to me, that's kind of the point that I wanted to drive home with that wasn't all of Paul's study. There's more to it, and we're going to finish it up, and we'll have the complete version, and we'll be able to send it up so everybody can look at the whole thing.
So related to that, Kurt, did I hear you say, Paul, that the group that's growing largest is 85 and older on South Whitby?
One of the fastest. Yeah, it's second or third.
It's fastest. Growing, but the largest group is 65 to 74. Yeah. It's the largest group. And then I think if you back up, and I could get this wrong by a percent or two, over 50% of the people in the South Whitby district are over 50. So half of the people in our district are over 50 years old. If I don't know that the charts that he has would show that, but I was mulling through the paperwork, and what I came up with was if you add up those groups, I think it's over 50% of the people that are over 50 years old.
And you have North Whitby, that's a whole different dynamic.
Yeah, and that's the discussion we need to have.
With the Navy, we don't age out because they just move out, and a new family about the same age moves in again. So our neighborhoods stay pretty much young. The last slide there, a couple of questions there. Workforce housing, and what tools do you have? And I guess one of the things we're looking at is a multifamily tax exemption is a tool that now our city of Oak Harbor, I don't think Langley or Coopville are eligible to do that. It's kind of a complex issue. I just wonder if that's something that courts or counties could do. Is my first question there.
But what was the question?
But just are you available to do the multifamily tax exemption on a port basis or on a county basis? Because that's certainly a tool. It has to drive density, and so it ties in really with the next one, because there's density rules with multifamily tax exemption. So you really need the infrastructure, which we have.
Yeah, we don't have
which is the next one, is infrastructure development of water, sewer, and other infrastructure. I know Freeland's kind of a mess with its sewer issues, and environmentally we have issues to deal with for growth, but I think certainly Oak Harbor could help. One of the things I would have liked to have seen rather than Coopville having the filter system and just bring their water from us, and because it comes from the Skagit River and it's surface water rather than tapping the well. So when you're all talking about growth and affordability, to me, dealing with septic and well and infrastructure are a big deal. And I know
that's really important.
Yeah, I know we have a lot of aging infrastructure in Oak Harbor, and so you might have some of the same things in a smaller scale than what we have, but we're really focusing on a central development area and residential target areas to really push the density and affordability.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Well, and going along with that, and I don't know how much land the district has outside of the city of Langley, you've got the fairgrounds, but I think working with the county and others, increasing the density along all the transportation corridors. So, you know, out to Ken's Corner, Bayview, back into town, those places would be great to have some more affordable housing because people can just walk out and get on the bus, and same, you know, down to Clinton. So loosening up the rules maybe about you know, development in those areas. And if the port has any land, make that part of the, or maybe you would want to purchase some as one of your projects.
Yeah, I don't think that's where we're going. In a minute, I'll describe where we're going. Janet?
Just a couple of things. One is that, ironically, when we did our community health improvement plan several years ago, Langley and Camano have the highest population in terms of being about 20 years older than the state average. And we continue to do that, only our data has gotten older, as you reference, on those two areas. But what was more interesting to me in the data when I looked at the most recent census data is that is true of the entire county except Oak Harbor, as Blaine pointed out. So that's just, it's just important to know that as we talk about these things, they interact. And of course, as we do the SEDS, they interact, that we as a county have gotten older. And then on the housing issue, the county has already begun trying to do, so somebody mentioned Bayview and out to Ken, other places, by changing the way in which we do zoning. And this may or may not impact the ports project, because I'm not sure how much of your district is in incorporated versus unincorporated land, but we've changed things like our rural service zones to allow for increased housing. But no matter how many zoning changes and no matter what regulations we loosen or not, I think we would all agree that we have to be very, very attentive to water availability and how do we address the septage issues. Sewer systems is one of the solutions, but they're very expensive. The county has a septic study that we're about to launch that will look at how do we also include ways to increase density in rural areas using maybe loss systems or other kinds of things. And how do we incentivize those projects? I have a meeting Friday with the Craft 3 folks to see how they play into our conversation as a public-private partnership. So this is really actually great, and I want to laud it, but none of this sits in a bubble, right? We're all in agreement that we can't extend, you know, Blaine's comment about the way they bring in water is really great, and it's excellent. It certainly loosens, but we also know with reduced snowpack and climate change, our mountain or our Skagit, our river-based water sources are equally, if not more threatened than our aquifer-based water. So all of this is interconnected is my big point and not a question. So sorry for taking a soapbox moment.
Point. Let me touch on a couple things before we move on. I think that was very well said, Janet. And I think Scott's point is good. I've always believed and tried to promote that these density bonuses should occur on transit routes. I'm more specific than just transportation routes. I feel like that's something the county can address with its new mandates coming down from the state, and I hope they do that so that more people can get around with less cars.
Yeah.
The thing that I think the goal of workforce housing with the port is more about breaking the ice than it is about us making property available to developers. On the kind of tax breaks, et cetera, bonus densities are going to work better with the common developers. We have property in a town that has water and sewer.
Yeah.
And what we'd like to do is kind of break the ice, provide something there, and hope that there are other municipalities, school districts, maybe the city that kind of jump on if we can provide a little bit of a model. That's what that's more about, is the awareness that it's not just about affordable housing. With us, it's about workforce housing. So yeah,
I agree with that
focus. But this is not just a great conversation, but we've all been having it, I know, for a couple of years, and nationwide it's been happening. I just wanted you to see the real numbers that Paul had brought out and just how astounding the change has been even in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So that's why you had to sit through this with me. Now we're going to move on to Sharon, and hopefully we have, thank you, Paul.
Thanks.
And hang around or not, whatever. And you have your consultant with you, right?
Sharon? Yes. Yes, I do.
We'll talk about Jennifer, and we'll talk about Go ahead.
Okay, well, Kurt asked us to come and just kind of give an overview and an update on where we are. Next slide, please. So I'm going to kick it off before I turn it over to Jennifer. So this spring, the county and the municipalities agreed to do a cost share to develop our SEDs. The county is the biggest contributor to the cost sharing because it was based on population. And so one question can be, why is the EDC leading this process, overseeing this process? And the easy answer is we're the only countywide economic development organization in Island County. And as well, we are the Associate Development Organization, which is a designation of the Department of Commerce, as well as Island County. So with that, I'm just going to move it over to Jennifer just very quickly. When I realized that we were going to probably be able to do this, the first person I reached out to is Jennifer Novak. I've known her for a while. We worked on a project of a few years ago where it was San Juan, Whatcom, Skagit, and Island County on a project. So I got to know her great experience and abilities to wrap around all this data and do this kind of work. So I called her up, and unfortunately she was available. So I was just really thrilled. And Michael Jones knows her. He actually worked with her. She used to work for the Port of Bellingham, and she is the one that basically wrote their SEDs. So with that, I'm just going to turn it over to Jennifer.
Thanks so much for that lovely intro, Sharon. I'm going to basically just go over what a SEDS is, sort of where we are in the process, and then I'm happy to take questions. And many of you probably have emails in your inbox from me to set up an interview or a time to meet if we haven't already. I'd like to extend that invitation to everyone on this meeting to set up a time to speak with me as we go through this process. So what is a SEDS? The really basic, answer for this is that it's a strategy-driven plan for regional economic development. And the SEDS is supposed to be the result of a locally based inclusive process that is designed to build capacity and guide economic prosperity in the region. So part of the document will identify some key trends and patterns in Island County, quite similar to what Paul showed for South Whidbey, except for it will be for all of Island County, including North Whidbey and Camano Island. And then it will follow with some goals, sub-goals, and an action plan based on the trends and patterns that are identified. Next slide, please. Thank you. So the benefits of a SEDS, it makes public agencies in Island County eligible to apply for EDA funding opportunities. The EDA has several large pools of money that allow for grant applications that are much larger than many other sources available in the state. And those are for infrastructure projects, workforce development, and also disaster recovery. So for example, fortunately, we had an updated SEDS in place in Whatcom County when the November 2021 flood hit, because now as that disaster money becomes available, we're eligible to apply for it. And the cities, small cities in particular, are eligible to apply for it. It also helps increase the likelihood of being successful on other grant applications. A lot of applications, especially state and federal, are now asking questions on those grant applications. Things like, is this part of a regional economic development strategy? And if you can answer yes and tie the project to that strategy, typically you get more points on the application, and it makes it more likely that yours is going to rise to the top. Also leverages existing strategies and documents. So the Port of South Whidbey's document, once that's released, will definitely be linked to this report and fed into it. And it'll also attempt to make sure they're in alignment, right? So we're all going in the same direction. And overall, the whole point of this is really to make development more programmatic and less reactive and ad hoc. Next slide, please. So a requirement of the EDA is to have a review committee who reviews the process and the document as we build it. So we have a review committee that has mostly staff members from every jurisdiction, as well as some people representing other organizations. So for example, we have two representatives from Island County, two representatives from Coopville, we have Langley, we have South Whidbey, we have both ports. We also have a few representatives from Kameno. So we have the Kameno Chamber Director, as well as somebody from the Snow Isle Library System. And we also invited John Sternlich and Gary Clark, who are the economic development or ADO directors for Snohomish and Skagit County, because we recognize how much interdependence there is between Skagit and Snohomish County. And this list is a changing list, right? So as people retire or move out of positions, this could change. This is an 18-month process. And we did have after our first meeting in June, added several members to this committee to make sure that everyone on the committee was comfortable with the composition. Next slide. So I did just want to highlight some differences between comp plans and SEDs. So as you all know, comp plans are driven by the guidelines and requirements that are set by the Growth Management Act, the GMA. And many cities and counties in Washington State are required to have a GMA, are required to have a comp plan under the GMA, while others do so voluntarily. And the point of the comp plan is really to articulate goals and standards that help guide the day-to-day actions of electeds and staff, government staff. And the mandatory elements include things like land use, housing, capital facilities, transportation, and ports, right? And for ports, a comp plan is mandatory if there's port revenue over $60 million. Next slide. Next slide. Oh, thank you. So a SEDS is not dictated by state law. It's actually a requirement for EDA funding and therefore is overseen by the EDA, which is the Economic Development Administration. It is the Federal Bureau for Economic Development in the United States. And so one of the, things that I like to liken the SEDS to is it's more similar to the relationship between FEMA and natural hazards mitigations plans, right? That there's a requirement to have one of these documents in place in order to access some of the resources of the Federal Bureau. And they set the guidelines in terms of what the document looks like, what we put in the document. And those components include things like an economic background summary. So that'll be data, largely, a lot of statistics similar to the ones that Paul showed. A SWOT analysis, so a strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities and threats analysis. And that's really supposed to help generate goals, right? So from that, we take the opportunities and the challenges and we make goals to address them. They also require an evaluation framework and a section on economic resilience. Some optional components have been added in the past 2 years. So these are up to the community and the review committee as to if they want to include them. So workforce development, climate resilience, and equity. And a lot of times with those three, we tend to see them in existing SEDs that have already been approved in other counties. They tend to be part of the goals, either as a major overarching goal or as a sub-goal. So for optional components, it could be part, baked into the document, or it can be its own section. And recently, there was also joint guidance from FEMA and the EDA to align the SEDS with natural hazard mitigation plans. And the reason for that's pretty obvious, right? We don't want to have a development plan that says we're going to develop in X, Y, and Z location. And then the natural hazards mitigation plan says X, Y, and Z location is, at high risk for X, Y, and Z natural disaster, right? So yes, the SEDS is a federal document that gives us access to federal resources. Next slide. So with this group, I just wanted to go over our timeline and deliverables to date, just so you kind of know where we are in the process. So in April 23, we finalized the timeline and the schedule for the internal supervisory committee, which meets before and after every external review committee meeting. We also developed the SWOT survey and sent that out by May 1st and posted that on the EDC's website as well. And then we also sent out the invites to the review committee by May 1st. So the review committee was established in May, and we had a meeting schedule set, and we did more outreach for the SWOT analysis, as well as starting some of the internal data review for the background summary. Next slide, please. So our first review committee meeting was on June 8th, and at that meeting, we discussed a lot of things similar to this meeting, but also things like the review committee composition, and that was where we added several more members at that meeting. Our July meeting, we continued to follow up with stakeholder outreach and the data sources that were being reviewed. And our August meeting, we really focused on who the goal is for the targeted stakeholder outreach. So which businesses and which sectors are we going to approach? And we started to draft goals based on our SWOT results. Our fourth meeting that was just a couple weeks ago in early September, we went again over the targeted stakeholder outreach, and we started reviewing goals one by one and having a conversation about those goals. And a lot of those goals line up perfectly with the goals that that Paul identified for Port of South Whidbey. So I think that there's definitely going to be bits in there, overarching goal about infrastructure. There's definitely going to be goals related to workforce housing and transportation. That's great. And really, we're going to keep reviewing these goals over the next couple months. We have a draft, a first draft that is going to be circulating within the committee at the end of October, and our November meeting will be to review that first preliminary draft. And then I'll take it back, and in December I'll make more edits, and then in January that committee will meet again, and after that meeting we will send the revised draft to the Board of Island County Commissioners, and we will present to them. I will present to them with Sharon in late January, early February to get their feedback. Then once the feedback from the board is incorporated, we'll put the document up for public comment sometime February to March 2024 for a required 30-day public comment period. Then we'll get that back, incorporate those edits, go over them in May with the review committee and Sharon's team at the EDC, and then I'll present for a second time to the board for adoption by resolution. So one of the requirements of the EDA is that the document is adopted by somebody of the community. And then once that's adopted, we will make any final edits required by the board and submit that to the EDA for their approval in June 24. Next slide. So as I mentioned, we're still doing stakeholder outreach. We did a countywide public SWOT analysis that ran from June 1st to September 15th, and we got 178 responses, which is great. Other SEDS that I've reviewed and worked on actually mostly tend to get less than 100. So I think the North Olympic Peninsula SEDS had around 60 replies to their survey. So this is great. Island County is a small community, and to get that many responses is awesome. We also completed jurisdiction SWOT analysis. So those were completed internally with staff and electeds as the jurisdictions saw fit, and then gave the information back to us. And currently I'm still doing sector stakeholder engagement and SWOT analysis. So many of you also have other businesses and other jobs. So I've probably emailed you in your capacity as business owners to meet with me and discuss some of your opportunities and challenges with doing work in Island County. So we'd love your participation in any way that you want. And I'm super happy to meet with you to discuss any of these things, any concerns, any questions, or even if you just want, you know, an update in the future, I'm happy to do that. Next slide, please. Yep, and there's my contact information. So I'm just at seds@edcislandcounty.org, and super happy to take questions.
All right. Looks like Blaine's got his hand up. Oh, and so does Janet. Go ahead, Blaine.
Yeah, I just have to put a disclaimer here on the earlier comment. It's my recommendation that Oak Harbor City Council do a participation, but the Oak Harbor City Council is still deliberating on participating in this. We're bringing it back on October 17th, and I think we worked out with Sharon to see if she can help us out with convincing them. And I think this presentation does a great job of talking about the benefits. And I know we're kind of on the line because, I mean, Oak Harbor was one of the people that kind of asked that this go along, Oak Harbor staff. So, but I just want to acknowledge, because it was kind of already brought up as some of my council members, that that there was already word that we were already approved when we have not approved the participation. But I certainly hope the city council will do so.
Yeah, both Jennifer and I will be at that city council meeting.
Janet.
So Jennifer, it was such a delight to meet with you, and I found your questions very well articulated, and it was it got me thinking a lot. I've already reached out to some of you about thinking about the different sectors we have in terms of economic development and how can we better serve those sectors. Mm-hmm. One of the things that strikes me, in my previous life, I was a social worker and solution-focused therapist, and that is a real thing, by the way, guys. So I want to be a solution-focused government bureaucrat right now. And I want to think about, as we do the SWOT analysis and we identify our threats, that within the opportunities, we are asset mapping what our opportunities are to address those threats as part of this study. So for example, and Kurt, you saw my initial email, but I'm not ready to talk about the whole big idea. For example, if a threat to small businesses is lack of financial literacy and the ability to build a small business, Sharon and the EDC has done address that through our RAIN program and through other things. So if we continue to identify what are our threats, I think it behooves us to really do a good job identifying how do we address those and asset mapping other entities or organizations that can help us overcome those, whether those are things like CURB, which I sit on the board, so you guys hear me talk about it. But, you know, are there programs in state and federal government or even philanthropic programs that can help us address the challenges we're facing? Are there regulatory things that need to change in order for us to, this came up in our last conversation, address challenges such as workforce housing? So I want to link, I don't want those to be standalone silos in our analysis. I want to link the two together.
Yeah, and I should be clear, with the SWOT analysis, that's kind of the point, right? So it's not, you know, this isn't, for example, this is not, I would say, not a marketing document. This is a document to really pull out, you know, this is what the situation is, including the challenges. And then the goals and the sub-goals and the action plans are all supposed to be designed around addressing those opportunities and challenges, right? So doing exactly what you're talking about, saying, okay, we know that we have a deficit of housing, right? So what are all of the various mechanisms and levers that Island County has to try to address the issue, right? Because what we want to do with this document too is make the actions things that we can do locally, right? So we don't necessarily want goals that are things, for example, that are federal level that we have less control over, right? We want things that are things we can actually move those levers and buttons and do some of that work for.
Yes, and we also want to know if there are already resources at the state and federal government. We want to educate ourselves and our community on how to access those.
Mm-hmm,
totally. You talked about climate mitigation threats. What's available to help people know how to access low-income grants or strategies around that as private business owners or asset owners?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of low income or income in general, I have kind of a broad question, if you can take a shot at it, Jennifer.
Sure.
I know that the SEDS process is really healthy for the county to go through. I mean, it's almost equivalent to the doing an economic development piece for the county's comprehensive plan, for example. And so I think it's really worthwhile. But the other thing that it does, I believe, is it sets, I think you just said that, it sets up the county to receive EDA funding in certain situations. The question that I have, is that funding even going to be available unless the community is somewhat, I mean, what are the conditions? If the community is wealthy, for example, does that change whether or not you could ever acquire any of this EDA funding, even in a disaster? I mean, seemed like there were some sort of parameters. Can you describe that?
Yeah, so I think that there are some pieces of funding and focus of the EDA on economically distressed districts, EDDs. So the EDA does have sort of a special designation for counties and cities that are showing economic distress, and they have various indicators that they look at. But not all of the programs necessarily preference the EDDs, and I do think that if there are good projects, for example, that already have, you know, that have already gone through a design phase, that have community support, where the benefit has a large regional impact, for example, and with Island County and Camino County and the connections to Skagit and Snohomish, I think that Island County is really well positioned to say that a lot of the infrastructure projects actually have regional benefits, like not just to the county, but to also Skagit and Snohomish County. And those types of projects are very appealing to the EDA, ones that are not just one-offs, ones that will have big impact. And I know that Oak Harbor has a few pieces of these infrastructure that they were originally interested in applying for an EDA grant for, and I think that they would be good projects. And to be honest, the EDA is really, the Region 10 manager, Laura Ives, in my experience, is really great at working with communities on identifying viable projects, right? They don't want us to waste our time applying for projects we won't get the money for, right? So as this process goes on and you know, we maybe have a SEDS project list where all of the jurisdictions participate and include their projects that they might be applying for on an annual basis, then we can go to Laura and say, which of these projects do you think are good candidates, and work that.
Laura was who I got that information from. She was great and very responsive. But I'm glad you described the difference, because I got the sense that it was more focused around these economically distressed communities. And I don't know if any community in Island County is going to fit that, but there are obviously other opportunities. Maybe you know, Blaine, maybe you know. Do you? You yes. Fit there?
We do.
Economic distress. So you even have more than one opportunity with EDA. Like on South Whidbey, we probably wouldn't have that opportunity in terms of getting grant funding.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That was very helpful for me. Are there any more questions? Well, thank you, Michael. I see you popped on. Do you have a question?
Not a question, but a comment related to what you had just asked and Jennifer's response. We've been working with our grant writers on looking at a possible EDA grant for the South Whidbey industrial area, or the airport access. And that census tract has the potential to qualify under the not distressed area, but just the demographics of that region. So it might be more flexible or more site specific than you would expect, right? It seems like South Whidbey is an affluent area, but not necessarily depending upon how you look at the data and the specific area your project is in or serving.
Right. There might be a project in South Whidbey that could be, you know, for one of the RAIDs, one of the rural areas that would be applicable, for example.
Thanks for the clarification on that. I would not have thought that to be true from my original conversation with Laura. It was very helpful. Awesome. Any more questions?
Great job.
Well, thanks for coming this morning and being prepared. Sharon, I really appreciate it. And Jennifer, it's good to meet you. Looking forward to reading through the finished product.
Great. Looking forward to your feedback.
Okay. Well, you're thank already you. Getting some, I think.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Layla, do we have a slide for our legislative priorities? Yeah. Can you? We're going to move on to just a quick discussion about legislative priorities. And then I know Scott has something he wants to talk about on other items. We'll get this wrapped up by 10:15. And Blaine, do you have something too?
Can we get it wrapped up by 10:10 so that we can get set up for the next meeting?
I'm sorry, 10:10. You want me out of here by 10:10? You got it. No problem. So what we're trying to do, what I was trying to do, I'm not sure everybody agreed, but I was trying to suggest that we try to whittle our priority requests to our legislators down to three that we could kind of agree on, as opposed to, you know, the shotgun effect. And so I just thought we should look over these. I mean, one of the things that was reoccurring was the Public Records Act reform. That definitely comes up almost everybody. Scroll down a little more there when you can. Oh, okay. Transportation enhancements, workforce housing. So, you know, we're all in agreement about Public Records Act reform. I think we should bring it up again. Workforce housing, it seems to be recurring, or housing. So we got to find a way to drill that down a little bit. And then let's see. Come on, you guys, help me out. What would be the next most common?
Kurt, this is really good what you're doing, which is looking for the places where we all had consensus. I appreciate this approach.
Okay, do you have an idea what our third?
I think public records reform, housing, and transportation, because some of the things that show up like ferries and other transportation, I think those can go into one bucket. We can put ferry, because I think ferries, we can't not include ferries, but they can go into a transportation. So if you're looking for three buckets, I liked what I, and people may disagree with some of this, I have four buckets, because okay. I would add climate change resiliency.
I like your three buckets, and you know, we will probably have time during that meeting to bring up other pieces from other buckets. Do we have other opinions on the three buckets, Scott?
I think transportation, it spans a few things, but it certainly falls under climate resiliency and sustainability. So I would almost put it, you know, list those and then, you know, including transportation or something like that.
Mm. Okay.
Make it one.
I think he's saying the heading would be more climate resiliency and the subheading of that would be transportation. I think is what you said, right?
Well, yeah, it'd be energy policy and transportation.
Okay, so that it's getting a little broad. Are there other suggestions?
I concur with Commissioner St. Clair's three buckets there. Public records wasn't on my list, but in talking to my staff,
yeah, all we have to do is talk to our staff. And, yeah,
it kind of got on my list, so certainly I added that workforce housing was already on my list and transportation was already on our list. So, and certainly including the ferries, not as countywide or expanding it. So I like the three areas. I mean, certainly climate resiliency is a big area. We just got a $150,000 grant from the state to help us add that to our comprehensive plan. So, I mean, if you wanted to do it as a fourth one, you could, but I like Janet's just three areas, but certainly if there's consensus to add a fourth one.
Well, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but, and I know Molly Mayor Hughes will have several. Everybody will have their own in the room. If we could just start with three, I really like that help, Janet. What do you think, Melanie?
You know, I like these three. I think that when we talk about housing, we also need to definitely talk about infrastructure, septage, and water availability.
Yeah. It doesn't work without those things, does it? You can zone things all you want and try and bring it, but if you can't... if you don't have water and you don't have sewer, you're toast.
We have water systems all over, at least in South Whitby, I'm sure all over the county right now that are old or failing. My personal water system in my little community, now they're trying to figure out where they're going to find $4 million. I mean, and I'm sure that's just one example of many dozens probably throughout the county.
There are other problems popping up. I mean, we've got these PFAS and other problems popping up, and the water district scenarios are going to change a lot. These small districts haven't even been insured in the past, and they're all going to scramble for that because they got to cover themselves. Even if you're just a volunteer board member of the whatever water district, now you're potentially liable if you're sending lead or something like that. Okay, I think I want to wrap that, Layla. Let's just wrap those three, and then I'm confident that we don't need to have a fourth, fifth, and sixth because we're a very vocal group, and that'll all come through. Do you know yet who has agreed to participate in terms of representatives?
I do, but I
don't know the list. But it sounded like... okay.
The Northwest representative for Senator Murray will be here.
Okay.
Tentative attendance from Senator Mazzal. I know those for sure.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. We're going to move on, just as I said, and leave for other items of mutual interest. We'll start with Scott. You had something you wanted to discuss.
Yeah, we've been having emergencies on the frequency of twice a week to twice a day where there's someone mentally ill, and the police can do nothing. We've gone through this pattern of arresting, bringing up here, person gets out almost immediately, same problem again, again, same people again and again. And this whole system between the police, jail, mental health, et cetera, it's really broken. It's really infecting our employees who work downtown outside, keeping it nice. It affects our tourists, our residents. It's an issue, and I know that this lawsuit's wonderful, but that's, you know, months down the road. We need a strategy, and we need to talk about how we can deal with these things in the very short run. And I was wondering if we should try to have like a sort of summit teach-in between police and sheriff, jail, county mental health, and other specialists, Greg Banks, and then bring in our Dave Paul, Clyde Shavers, and other leaders, and do just get a grip on the situation and think about what we can do in the very short run. And Jose offered to give us a tour of the jail. I think all the other participants would probably be very willing to come and present what they know and their perspective. And because we need some solutions today, tomorrow, next week.
Have you reached out to Linda Austin yet, our human services director, to see what of our joint response net? We have community navigator programs. We have a joint response program for law enforcement and human services. We just authorized the beginning of a mobile outreach van. Have you reached out to Linda first to see what is already available?
Well, I think our police department is very aware of those services, and it's still not enough. So
I hear you, but I want to make sure you have access to all of them so that we're not recreating a wheel.
I agree with Scott that some kind of meeting or something would be really valuable. The lawsuit he's referencing is the county has joined in a lawsuit against the state of Washington for not complying with their obligation to provide these beds for people. And what this is kind of, we now are starting to talk about in the community about building a new jail that would have mental health beds as part of that jail. So I think that it's very timely what you're asking for, Scott.
Maybe at the next COG, or maybe we do a special meeting, or I don't know.
So don't we have Oak Harbor's chief is on there's a safety committee that kind of great, it's kind of like the RTPO or something that's already law and justice.
Yeah, maybe already, at 12:15.
Yeah, 12:15. I know I'm not on that, but I know certainly it's a major topic of our police
she's
force.
On, she's is on that law kind justice. Of a
area to focus on, and if we want to intersect it into COG, I'm certainly okay with that, but I'm just trying to think that
maybe have them come and present, because they might be already
certainly them. You're right, it's a major topic of a discussion for us. We had the opiate settlement, since we're over 10,000, we've got a settlement on that, so a lot of discussion there. We're adding another police officer to kind of help that using opiate funding. So I mean, we're certainly,
can we put this as a topic for the next meeting?
Do you not for this next meeting,
this legislative
and then I think I've got something for November as well, but it sounds like law and justice is the place that should occur, and that representatives should go to get that on their agenda and go attend their meetings. And I don't know, that's for somebody other than me to figure out. Was there something else for you that you wanted?
I was looking ahead for scheduling into November.
Oh, thank
suggestion
you.
That we move the meeting on the fourth Wednesday to the fifth Wednesday of November. That would be November 29th.
Moving away from Thanksgiving, I guess, is what
I would agree with that.
Okay. How does everybody feel about that? November 29th.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll do that, and then we don't need a motion for that, do we? I don't think so. December 27th is 2 days after Christmas. Is anybody even going to be around? Often we've actually canceled that meeting. I don't know how you all feel.
Yeah, I'm canceling.
All right, let's just cancel that. So we've got October, which is legislative priorities. Coming up, and then I've got an agenda for November, and it'll be late. It'll be on the 29th. So we'll make a note of that. If there are any other items, speak up. Other than that, the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you. Okay, Layla.